Welcome to the Talk the Walk Sports Podcast. You're gonna walk the talk and talk the walk. You're gonna walk the talk and talk the walk. You're gonna walk the talk and talk. My brothers and my sisters. Now, here's your host, Jason Walker.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Talk the Walk from PowerRankingsAndMore.com and Aggie Radio at Utah State University. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen. We've got so much to go over today, and I say that every time, and I usually end up only talking about two major topics. But today we've got several things, four or five things we're going to cover, mostly spending a lot of time in the NBA as it has just started. We're into the opening week. We've already had basically every team. I don't think any team hasn't yet played, and a lot of teams are heading into their second and sometimes even third games. I believe the Celtics will be playing their third game in the next couple of days after a really rough start. And we're going to get into the Celtics a lot in these first few minutes here because they are the main topic of news story. But we're also going to revisit the Kansas City Chiefs. I wasn't planning on talking about the Chiefs at all. I was planning on talking about some other topics in the NFL just to have my standard at least 15 minutes spent on the NFL. But the Chiefs demand attention in terms of us covering them. They went 5-0 to start, and we're going to get into more of this. Obviously, they've lost the last couple of games. They've lost two games since I last talked about them, our last podcast. So really quick, we're going to get into the NBA first, and we're going to talk about Gordon Hayward and really focus on the Eastern Conference as well as some of the rookies. But first, let's get things going with the NBA.
NBA.
Back to the below, right side, here we go.
All right, so we've got the NBA. Gordon Hayward goes down in the first game of the year. Not just the first game, but the first 5.5 minutes. Within 5.5 minutes, Gordon Hayward suffered what was a gruesome leg injury. And to those of you who had the unfortunate privilege of seeing that, I'm sorry. And I was one of them, so I know your pain. I don't know Gordon Hayward's pain, obviously, as I've never jacked up my foot that bad before. But Gordon Hayward, all reports are that he's going to be out for the year, at least the ones that I've seen so far. So Gordon Hayward will not likely return this season, and if he did, it would be the very tail end, the playoffs, and he wouldn't really be himself. You don't come back from an injury immediately. You need a lot of time and a lot of basketball time in, you know, spending most of this season rehabbing and then this upcoming offseason working himself back into shape. It's actually probably the best time. If he was going to suffer this injury, then the first game is really the best time because that allows him the most amount of time to rehab, work himself back in shape. Because with leg injuries, it's very easy to get out of shape because you can't walk and you can't run. You can't do most of the conditioning. And so Gordon Hayward is going to need all the time he can get to not only get healthy, but get back into shape and especially basketball shape. But I mean, and enough about that, because really there's nothing we can do at this point. Good luck to Gordon Hayward. I mean, even though I'm a Jazz fan, a huge Jazz fan, I would never have wished this kind of thing on Gordon Hayward. But just all the good luck and quick healing to him, and all the thoughts and prayers of myself and really anybody else, because a lot of other people have offered their thoughts, prayers, and whatever else. But the Celtics have to move on. They had to move on in that game, and kudos to them because they nearly came back and won that game. And just we have to look at how the Celtics are going to do this season. Unfortunately, the prognosis is not very good because the Celtics gave up a lot in order to put together their big three, as they call it, really only a big two. But they had Kyrie Irving, Gordon Hayward, and Al Horford. Those were their big three, with Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward forming the core of that. That was their star power. They traded in a lot of their depth, either in literal trades or in just having to give up players in terms of salary cap, such as Avery Bradley and Kelly Olynyk. They gave up these players or let them walk because they couldn't afford to have them and the stars in Kyrie Irving and Gordon Hayward. And that was the risk that Danny Ainge took. He wanted to go from being that team that has a ton of depth but not really any stars outside of Isaiah Thomas. And Isaiah Thomas is not the kind of star who will take you to the finals and help you win the finals. He's a regular season superstar, but in the postseason, Isaiah Thomas will never take you anywhere. And Danny Ainge traded in Isaiah Thomas for a superstar in Kyrie Irving who could do more of that, who could take a team to the finals. Kyrie Irving's made game-winning shots. He's the kind of guy that you can trust in any situation to get you a bucket most of the time. And then he got a very reliable all-star in Gordon Hayward, who is a dependable, he can play both sides of the ball very well, and he's going to pull his weight offensively and defensively and pull the weight of several other players. You know, I hesitate in calling Gordon Hayward a true star, but he does have a lot of the aspects of stars in this league. So he was going to help the Celtics in a lot of ways, and having Kyrie Irving was going to help the Celtics. And that was what Danny Ainge wanted. He wanted the big three instead of the average 15. Because those teams that have the average 15, like maybe the Hawks of a few years ago when they won 60 games, sure, that's going to help you in the 82-game regular season when you have that depth. But what are you going to do in the playoffs? Absolutely nothing. And those teams have always done absolutely nothing. Everybody talks about the Detroit Pistons, but that was one anomaly, and even then you can argue they had stars. But ultimately, the risk that Danny Ainge took, which is a good risk, has now backfired because Gordon Hayward is out. And that's going to affect the Celtics. They're still going to make the playoffs because they still have good players. But the thing is, their team now consists of Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, and a bunch of young guys. Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum, Marcus Smart, just a bunch of guys that, yeah, sure, they're going to be a decent team in the East, but keep in mind, if they were in the West, they probably wouldn't make the playoffs, or they'd barely squeak in. And so the thing is that they've gone from being potentially the number one seed again, if depending on how the Cavaliers play in the regular season, you can't really predict if LeBron James is going to want to carry his team to the number one seed. He didn't last year. So the Celtics might have been able to once again take the number one seed, even though they might have only won 50 to 55 games maybe, or won less, just barely under 50 games like I believe they did last year. No, they won over 50 games. And losing my train of thought, the Celtics won't be able to get that one or two seed. They'll probably fall to three and maybe even four. And there are two teams that I'm looking at, and one specifically, but the two teams I'm thinking of that could overtake the Celtics are the Milwaukee Bucks and the Washington Wizards. And I'm really high on the Bucks this season, at least in terms of being able to overtake the Celtics. I don't think they're going to go anywhere in this year in terms of the playoffs. But I think that they can be one of the top teams in the East, and with some luck and some good development, and again, more luck, they could end up with the number one seed. And that's assuming that the Cavaliers decide to coast for a good chunk of the season. And these are a lot of the reasons. The first one is that they have star power. They have at least one star in Giannis Antetokounmpo, the man whose name I say differently every time I say it. They have good depth behind him, but keep in mind with Giannis, last year I believe he was 22 years old. I believe he's turning 23 shortly, or already has turned 23, but last year at 22 years old, he averaged just under 23 points at 22.9. He averaged 8.8 rebounds per game, 5.4 assists per game, 1.6 steals, and a hair under two blocks at 1.9. He was the only player to finish top 20 in all five of those categories: points, rebounds, assists, steals, and blocks. The only player to be top 20 in all of those categories, and he was top 10 in most of them. He was like 18th in assists, but he was up there in steals, blocks, points, and rebounds. This is a guy who can do everything. And when teams have a guy like that, you know, LeBron James, Kevin Durant, in a way, Russell Westbrook, who I believe was top 20 in four of those categories. He wasn't up there in blocks. But when you have a guy who can do so much and you can rely upon for just anything, then you can go far, assuming that player stays healthy, of course. LeBron James, who can do just about everything for a team, he can score, he can rebound, he can pass the ball, and he can play defense. His teams have made it to the Eastern Conference Finals every year for most of my recent memory. I can hardly remember an NBA Finals that did not include LeBron James. And we've got another guy in Giannis Antetokounmpo who can essentially do the kinds of things that LeBron James does. Basically everything. He can do basically everything for a team. And really no other player besides LeBron James can do that, so far as I can tell. Kevin Durant can kind of do that, but he's not really a super great distributor. He's not known for being able to set up teammates. Giannis can do that. LeBron James can do that. Even though Kevin Durant can do basically everything else, you know, scoring, rebounds, he can play solid defense, but he's not averaging a steal and a half and two blocks. So with that kind of star power, the Bucks, along with the ability to play smaller, big, they have a really long team. They have last year's Rookie of the Year in Malcolm Brogdon. And so the Bucks, they do have a young team. They have guys like Thonmaker and Giannis and Brogdon, who are all young players. I mean, keep in mind, Giannis is still, you know, younger than 25. Like I said, he's 22 or 23 years old at this point. So they do have a young team, and that's one of the main reasons why I don't believe they're going to go far in the NBA playoffs. That with a lack of three-point shooting and, you know, things like that. But overall, they have a good team that I believe will overtake the Celtics in terms of being the number two or potentially, again, with some luck, the number one overall seed. And again, being the number one overall seed, I don't believe would make them the best team. The Cavaliers are essentially going to have an easy path to the finals. It's essentially guaranteed. Assuming no injuries to LeBron James, the Cavaliers will make the Eastern Conference Finals. Whether or not they win is going to depend on the health of some other guys, such as Isaiah Thomas, Kevin Love, and, you know, all the rest on the Cavaliers. So that is how much of a ripple effect Gordon Hayward's injury has had. It has turned the potentially number two or even number one seed in the Celtics into an irrelevant third or fourth seed Eastern Conference team that will not challenge anyone in terms, or at least won't challenge the Cavaliers in terms of being able to go to the finals. Now, some people might say, well, hey, the Celtics nearly beat the Cavaliers. They barely lost an opening night without Gordon Hayward. Well, that's true. Can't argue with that. But that was opening night. Everyone's fresh. There's no fatigue or travel effects or anything like that. Try that game again in a seven-game series. With all those, in fact, you've just played 82 games and however many playoff games and getting into the Eastern Conference Finals. And you want to try that again? See if the Celtics can beat the Cavaliers in a seven-game series when you have Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, and essentially no one else who you can depend upon in terms of veteran playoff experience. They don't have anyone. Everyone else is either too young or not good enough. So, and it's going to affect guys in the team that comes out of the Western Conference, likely the Warriors. Because last week we talked about how the Warriors are going to have a much tougher road through the Western Conference playoffs, and how the Cavaliers were probably going to play a very easy playoff schedule. And now, with their number one contender, their number one rival in terms of the Eastern Conference, is now out of the picture. We know that the Cavaliers can beat the Celtics in a seven-game series. So that is how much of a ripple effect Gordon Hayward has had on the NBA. Now, we are going to switch gears here, and we're going to talk about some of the rookies in the NBA and what to expect, because obviously I can't have too many reactions over performances because most of these guys have played only one game. Some have already played two. Jason Tatum has already played two games, but most of these guys have played one. Lonzo Ball only had his debut last night from the time that I'm recording this. And we are going to talk a little bit about Lonzo Ball since he's the most notable rookie. He gets all the headlines. But with all these rookies, a lot of people are keeping their eyes on the rookies. You have guys like Dennis Smith Jr., Jason Tatum, Lonzo Ball, Donovan Mitchell, and everyone else that I can't think of off the top of my head. Just about every team, it feels like, has a rookie that they feel is going to be promising and that could be the next big thing. There's almost seven of them that have at least made headlines in one way or another and could in some way be in contention for the Rookie of the Year. But one thing that everyone needs to keep in mind is that these rookies are going to put up some numbers. They're going to put together some highlight reels, but they're not going to be very efficient. They're not going to be having these like Steve Nash type efficiency numbers. Of course, nobody has Steve Nash type efficiency numbers, but they're not even going to be average. So I took the just about all the rookies that I could think of who have made some headlines in terms of potential rookie of the year. And so this list comprises of Markelle Fultz, Dennis Smith Jr., Ben Simmons, De'Aaron Fox, Jason Tatum, Josh Jackson, Donovan Mitchell, and Lonzo Ball, in no particular order. And so I took all these guys and I averaged their numbers from their debuts. And here is what I found in terms of their efficiency and overall totals. On average, they shot 42% from the field and 26.7% from three. Keeping in mind, pretty much all of these guys are wings or point guards. So these aren't necessarily thrown out of proportion by having big men or centers. And they averaged about 12 points per game and were a combined minus 28 in plus minus. And keeping in mind that Donovan Mitchell was an extreme outlier at plus 22. Take him out, and that number goes way down. I didn't do the math. What is that? 50? If I'm doing my math right, whatever 28 plus 50 is. And so these guys aren't going to put up the greatest efficiency numbers. They are going to put up decent statistics in other cases. For instance, we had a couple of double-doubles. Dennis Smith Jr. had 16 points and 10 assists. Jason Tatum had 14 points, 10 rebounds. That's two double-doubles there. Lonzo Ball had 9 rebounds. And so you're going to see some impressive things in terms of statistics. Ben Simmons had 18 points, and I mean, he said that he felt like he was playing NBA 2K. And so there are going to be games and things like that where you see them put up great numbers, although in a lot of those games, they might shoot 5 for 19 but have 21 points, which would actually be remarkable because it means that they probably shot like 10 free throws. But I mean, I think only two of these guys, Markelle Fultz and Dennis Smith Jr., shot more than 50% from the field. Most everybody else shot below 50% and in the mid to low 40s. In the case of Donovan Mitchell and Lonzo Ball, shot less than 30% from the field. But that does not mean that these guys are busts. A lot of rookies put up low efficiency numbers. The ones who don't end up being Rookie of the Year. And so keep that in mind. So guys like Lonzo Ball, Donovan Mitchell, Josh Jackson, Jason Tatum, and just all these guys, just I'm not even going to pick names out, all these guys are probably going to shoot in the mid to low 40s overall, with maybe exceptions of guys who don't take a whole lot of threes. Maybe guys like Ben Simmons and De'Aaron Fox don't take a whole lot of threes. But even then, they'll probably shoot in the mid to low 40s in terms of field goal percentage. And I'd be surprised if any of these rookies shoots above 35% from three. Most of them will shoot 30%, just around 30%, either above, slightly above, or slightly below. But most of these guys are going to put up in the, I would say, 12 to 18 range in terms of points per game, varying mostly on how many minutes they get. A guy like Donovan Mitchell could average in the 12 to 15 point per game range, but he's going to spend a lot of time coming off the bench. Markelle Fultz could also face some limitations because he came off the bench for the 76ers in his first game. But guys like Dennis Smith Jr., he's going to probably average in the 16 to 18 range because he's starting and he's going to get a lot of the ball. So a lot of the points per game is going to depend on amount of minutes that these guys get. Jason Tatum's probably another example of high points per game due to opportunity. So just keep that in mind, that your guy, when the writers and talking heads talk about your rookie and say, I don't like his efficiency numbers, he's not shooting well from the field, keep in mind that rookies are going from being the most dominant, in the most dominant category in terms of athleticism, scoring ability, and whatever. They're coming from college where they are clearly the best player. Now they are going to a league in the NBA where they are in like the 20th percentile in ability, mental capacity, athleticism. They are not the dominant player, and they have to get used to that. And a lot of that comes in the form of low efficiency numbers, where they're trying really hard, but they're struggling because they're facing such better opponents. So they might put up 20 points, but it'll take them 18 shots to do that. And as they get older and they get better and they work on their game, they'll lower that to scoring, or they'll score 22 points and only take 12 shots to do it. So it will eventually average out for these rookies. And a big example of this has to be Lonzo Ball. The fact that he is not going to put up really any box score statistics. And, you know, a guy like me, I don't really want Lonzo Ball to succeed, mostly because he's A, a Laker, and B, I hate his dad. So I'm happy every time I see Lonzo Ball shoots 1 for 12 or 1 for 6 or 2 for 15. But the thing is, Lonzo Ball is going to do a lot of that this year. But that's not where his impact is felt. Heading into the year, what were the things Lonzo Ball was hailed as being able to do? He was hailed for his intangibles, his basketball IQ, his passing ability, being able to get teammates involved, changing the culture, all these different things. All these things were apparently so hyped up, he was the number two pick. And honestly, if the Lakers had the number one overall pick, he would probably have been the number one overall pick. Because Markelle Fultz was the guy that everyone said, yeah, he's the best player, but Lonzo. That was the way the draft went. And the thing is, of all those things that I named, the intangibles, getting teammates involved, changing culture, passing, whatever, how much of that shows up on the box score? One of those things kind of does. And I say kind of because passing ability can show up on the box score in the form of assists. But assist numbers do not indicate good passing. Case in point, James Harden and Russell Westbrook. They stack assists like nobody's business. But I count neither as great passers. Sure, they can get the ball to a guy who will then make a shot, but that does not make you a great passer. It does not make you a great, passing player. I'm struggling to express myself. It doesn't mean that you can manipulate a defense and find the guy who's open to make the shot. They're more the playmaking assist getters, the guys who make assists by drawing two or three defenders and then finding the guy who got abandoned by his defender. Lonzo Ball and other guys throughout history, the guys he's going to try and be like, the Jason Kidds, the Steve Nashes, the John Stocktons, these are the guys who are the great passers, who manipulated defenses and found the open guy, even though none of them really scored tons of points per game. John Stockton topped off at 17 points per game in his career, usually averaging around 14, but he would average, in his prime, 14 assists a game. That's being able to manipulate a defense and pass well. And that's what Lonzo Ball will try to do. And so when you see him, again, as rookies struggle, and he will, to score points, to shoot efficiently, when he goes 1 for 6, 0 for 5, 2 for 12, Every now and again, he'll have a game where he shoots 5 of 8. You know, he'll have plenty of good games. There's 82 games he'll at least try and play in. He'll have his good games, but he's going to spend more of his time shooting 2 for 6 and 1 for 5 than he will shooting 10 for 12. And he'll put up some rebounds. You know, maybe he'll get 8 assists. He'll probably average somewhere in the 7 to 10 assist range, depending on a ton of things. But don't be alarmed, Lakers fans and all other Lonzo Ball fans. Don't be alarmed when he continues to shoot like this and averages out in the low 40s, maybe even the high 30s on the low end. And if he shoots in the low 30s from three-point range, maybe even the high 20s. Again, don't be alarmed. He's a rookie whose scoring ability is one of his weakest attributes. And you'll know when Lonzo Ball has arrived, when teams start keying on him on offense, when they focus on stopping him and not his higher scoring teammates, such as Brandon Ingram and Brooke Lopez and whoever else comes in, when teams are trying to stop Lonzo Ball instead of his higher scoring teammates, you will know he has arrived. And this is how I learned that Rudy Gobert had arrived in the NBA. Because during a game against the Boston Celtics, it was the Utah Jazz against Boston Celtics, and I was watching how the Celtics were defending the Jazz, and I noticed they were focused a lot on Rudy Gobert. Rudy Gobert averaged 14 points per game last year. He was the third leading scorer, which is about where Lonzo Ball will be for most of his career, assuming he's on a good team. A championship team that has Lonzo Ball will probably have Lonzo as the third best scorer. That's kind of where Rudy Gobert is at in terms of scoring ability, or at least last year. But Brad Stevens recognized how Rudy Gobert affected the offense in non-box score ways. His screening, his positioning, his offensive rebounding ability, which actually does technically show up on a box score. But Brad Stevens kept Rudy Gobert out of the game in terms of his offense. And just think about that. Rudy Gobert. What do you think of when you hear Rudy Gobert? You think defense, because he's a dang good defender, arguably the best in the NBA. But Brad Stevens obviously had some sort of game plan to deal with Rudy Gobert defensively, but he keyed on him on offense. And the Celtics won that game because the Jazz just were terrible on offense. And that is how you'll know if Lonzo Ball has arrived, because his potential is to be able to manipulate defenses, pass well, find open guys, create scoring opportunities for others and himself through basketball IQ. And if teams recognize that he is the focal point of the offense and that by shutting down him, the linchpin, they will be able to shut down the entire Lakers offense, that is when you know that Lonzo Ball has at least in part fulfilled his potential. But until that point, it doesn't matter how many points he scores, how many assists he gets, or how good or bad he shoots, he is not doing what he is meant to do in the NBA. His potential lies in stuff that will not show up on a box score. So that's about all I've got for the NBA. And we're going to head on and try and talk about, again, like I said, we're going to talk about the Kansas City Chiefs and what the heck is going on in this NFL that has just been completely turned on its head.
NFL.
Touchdown, Titans! It's a miracle!
Pass is intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Throws into the end zone.
All right, so the Kansas City Chiefs, who would have thought that I would have spent multiple episodes talking extensively about the Kansas City Chiefs? I would never have thought that at the beginning of the season. Because I didn't see the Kansas City Chiefs starting 5-0, and then immediately after I addressed the fact that they're 5-0, I then have to talk about the fact that they are 0-2 in their last couple of games. And some people have already begun to point out that the Minnesota Vikings started 5-0, and then completely collapsed. I believe they finished 3-8 after that point. Well, that's the information I got. I didn't spend too much time looking into it, although I did look into the tendencies of contenders and pretenders 2 episodes ago. So technically, I've talked about the Kansas City Chiefs 3 weeks in a row. Jeez, this NFL, and I originally, as I alluded to, I wasn't planning on talking about the Chiefs when I was preparing like Wednesday and Thursday to record here on Friday. I didn't anticipate talking about the Chiefs because I kind of expected that they'd beat the Raiders, and then they lost, and I was like, well, now I kind of got to talk about them because they're a topic, and it's worth diving into, well, why have they lost the last couple of weeks? What's going wrong? 1 or 2 losses overall throughout the season, you know, for an elite team is normal. But going 5-0 and then losing 2 in a row, let's look at it for a minute. And if they lose, heaven help us, if they lose 3 in a row, I will lose my mind because I will have just lost all hope in being able to predict anything in the NFL this year because everything is going out the window. But when you look at the Chiefs, I think a lot of people might just go on and say, well, yeah, they're pretenders because they have Alex Smith at quarterback. He can't lead them to a Super Bowl. You know, their offense just doesn't work because, you know, Alex Smith. Well, my contention is don't blame Alex Smith. It's not his fault. He is still on pace for a crazy career year. And I did the math last week, and I didn't do it again this week because it would just been somewhat redundant. But he's on pace to throw for more than well over 4,000 yards, which his current career high is like 3,500. And it's probably more because he threw for quite a few yards this last week. He's got, I believe, 15 touchdowns, 15 or 16 touchdowns, which is essentially, I believe he had 15 touchdowns last year. So through 7 games, he has matched his touchdown total from last season and has yet to throw an interception. And yes, there has been some slowing down. But the thing is, the offense for the Chiefs has a winning formula. So that I'm going to just basically spend the next however many minutes just beating down that the offense is not the issue for the Chiefs. They have a winning formula that Super Bowl teams have used in the past multiple times. And that is the ability to adjust and tweak things from week to week or even in mid-game to be able to win games in multiple ways. And the Chiefs have done this year. And the epitome of this kind of thing is the New England Patriots. And from week to week or from year to year, for example, in 2014, the New England Patriots had 3 players rush for over 300 yards throughout the entire year. And 3 of those players each had their own individual 100-yard rushing game. And 5 different players recorded a rushing touchdown that year, and that was one of the years the Patriots won the Super Bowl. And an example of changing year to year, the 2016 Patriots had only 1 player rush for 300 yards. That was LeGarrette Blount, who ran for over 1,000. And LeGarrette Blount scored 18 of the 19 rushing touchdowns for the Patriots. I think Jacoby Brissett scored the other rushing touchdown. But Belichick has been known for his week-to-week overhauls, sometimes just complete overhauls, of his offense and defense. And the Kansas City Chiefs have done this to a degree. They have 3 main offensive weapons who they have used almost in rotation to defeat different opponents. Week 1 against the Patriots, Kareem Hunt, obviously he was the main story, had 246 total yards, 3 touchdowns. Tyreek Hill had 7 catches, 133 yards. Week 2, Travis Kelce, tight end, 8 catches, 103 yards and touchdown. Week 3, Kareem Hunt has 183 total yards and a touchdown. Keeping in mind that their tight end, Travis Kelce, had 1 reception for 1 yard. So they didn't even use one of their weapons. Week 4, after having 1 reception for 1 yard the previous week, Travis Kelce, 7 catches, 111 yards. And then Tyreek Hill, their main wide receiver, 5 receptions for 35 yards. Week 5, Kareem Hunt, 100 yards rushing, he had over 100 yards rushing, and Kelce had 8 receptions, 98 yards. Next week, Kareem Hunt It was actually the week that they were, it was against the Steelers. So Kareem Hunt was shut down rushing, but he had 5 receptions for 89 yards. And this last week, Tyreek Hill had 6 receptions and 125 yards. So essentially, every week, the Kansas City Chiefs have rotated through their different weapons, which is what Super Bowl teams do. It isn't about having that one star, that one receiver, that one running back, that one player on offense who you can just go to and just spam all day long. You need to be able to adjust and say, well, this week we're playing a team that, you know, we can use this wide receiver to exploit. We can exploit this weekend. Or, hey, this week, you know, they're not very good at covering running backs out of the backfield. So this week, you know, our starting running back is kind of a power back. We're not going to key on him as much. We're going to play our receiving running back more, and he's going to catch a lot of passes out of the backfield, and that'll be our main deal. Those are the kind of things that Super Bowl caliber teams are able to do. The Patriots have been doing it for years. Last year, the Atlanta Falcons were finally able to break through because they had a stable of running backs and wide receivers on offense who could do a lot of things for that offense and allow them to be versatile and change things up. Because the year before that, they were pretenders. Last year, they were contenders. It was because they were finally able to have a versatile offense that had multiple ways that they could beat opponents, either through the air or through the ground. And that's what the Chiefs are able to do. They're able to beat you on the ground, through the air, just however they want on offense. Really, the only flaw I can see in their offense is the fact that they don't have a backup rusher. Alex Smith is their second leading rusher. And there's only 2 players who have more than, I think, 5 carries or something like that. I think West, the guy with last name, I can't pronounce his first name, is the 3rd leading rusher, and he has 5 carries. Because I think they designed some gadget plays for Tyreek Hill, but he never really goes anywhere. Or at least not yet. He hasn't broken off for like an 80-yard run yet this season, which I feel like will happen at some point. But Kareem Hunt is basically their only source of rushing. And so far, it's worked. And again, yes, there has been some slowing down. I mean, look at the last couple weeks. He's averaged 4 yards per carry. The first 5 weeks, he averaged 6.2 yards per carry. So yeah, there is some slowing down from Kareem Hunt. But overall, he's going to have a terrific year, and the Kansas City offense is not the problem. That's the one thing you need to understand, is that that isn't the problem for the Chiefs. What's going wrong for the Chiefs so far in these last 2 games is their defense. They're averaging, this year, they're averaging nearly 400 yards allowed per game, 396.3. That's 29th in the NFL. Obviously, they've played their 7th game, and not every team has even played their 6th game. They're 19th in points allowed, so they're doing okay in allowing points, but they're just giving up yards and spades. And when you look at the last 3 games, they're allowing 28 points per game and allowing 445.3 yards per game. The first 4 games, 359.5 yards allowed per game and 19.3 points allowed per game. They would be top 10 in points allowed if we were just going based off the first 4 games. And I believe they would still be in the 20s in terms of yards. But again, they would be considerably better. And that's the thing, these last couple of games against the Steelers, they allowed 400-plus yards to Ben Roethlisberger. Yeah, they only gave up 19 points, but their defense wasn't able to hold the Steelers when it mattered. And a lot of it came down to a bit of a fluke play. But the thing is, the defense is what is failing the Kansas City Chiefs right now. And that is the thing that you should be watching. Don't pay attention to Alex Smith, at least don't key on them. Don't criticize Alex Smith. He's doing fine. They have a formula that so far is working on offense. They're scoring a lot of points. They're getting a lot of yards. And nobody has really stopped them. The only time anybody's really been able to stop them is the Steelers. They allowed 13 points. Yes, the Raiders won, but the Chiefs got 30 points. And if your offense puts up 30 points and you lose, that's not on the offense. It's not the offense's fault if the offense puts up 30 points. That's something you can live by in terms of football. You put up 30 points, you should win that game. Otherwise, you need to have a chat with your defense. And so that's basically all that we have today on Talk the Walk. Again, thank you so much for listening. And I'm sorry if you're tired of hearing me drone on about the Chiefs. Hopefully you enjoyed some of that NBA talk. But next week we are going to talk a little bit about how I'm going to talk about how crazy this NFL season has been and all the different things, you know, maybe why it's been so crazy. I don't know if I can figure that out exactly, but we're going to talk about the things that we do and the things that we don't know. And at that point, we're going to be about halfway through the season. So we'll have a fairly good idea of what we've kind of been able to expect and maybe be able to see some trends from this absolutely crazy NFL season. And we'll get to talk about, you know, the chances of LeBron James ending up in Los Angeles once we get a little more data from how the Lakers are playing this season. But again, thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you later. You're gonna walk.